If we give the church time to speak, we'll see the wisdom.
We are women encouraging and equipping women to universally and uniquely serve Christ in our feminine vocation.
By embracing joy, laughter, freedom, and friendship, we are seeking to thrive in the trenches of our domestic churches.
Welcome to Thriving in the Trenches podcast. This is Becky Carter.
And this is Megan Schreiber. You're listening to episode number 47, Understanding Humanae Vitae.
And hey guys, we'd like to thank all of you who have supported us thus far with your prayers, your words of encouragement, and now your financial support. If you would like to support us with a monthly or one-time gift, please head over to thrivinginthetrenches.com's support us page. And we thank you very much.
Absolutely. We thank you a lot. And so let's jump right into the topic for today. This week, we are very, very excited to have a special guest to be able to speak into this topic. Mallory Smythe speaks around the country on topics such as Catholic worldview, inheritance of faith, and the feminine genius. Mallory fell in love with Jesus during her junior year at Louisiana State University and entered into full-time ministry after working 1 year as an accountant. She served as a focus missionary for 5 years and is currently the director of program growth for Endow, educating on the nature and dignity of women. It is her dream to see Catholics fall deeply in love with a God who loved them first, fully living the joy of the gospel. Mallory currently lives in Denver with her husband, Jared, and their two daughters, Penelope and Eliza. Welcome to the podcast, Mallory.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, when I read your bio, of course, I was first excited to see that you were from Louisiana. So there you go. Immediate connection. Isn't that funny how it happens?
I think Louisiana people always find each other. Whenever I was my first year as a focus missionary, I was in Tennessee and my teammate was from Iowa and she was always like, you just find them. They're everywhere. I was like, we are everywhere. We're all over the place.
That's really funny. Well, Mallory, I'm going to open up and ask you to share with us a little bit about your journey. Just, you know, kind of where you came from, what led to this calling, this vocation, this part of your vocation, and just what brought you to this spot today?
Sure. I'm from South Louisiana, and I think my story is really similar to probably most or many faithful cradle Catholics now. I was raised Catholic. I always joke that South Louisiana is about 90% Catholic. You know, even I had a friend once say even Satanists go to Mass because there's just nothing else to do because everybody is in Mass. And so I was raised in that environment. And then when I got to college, I just had a lot of questions that weren't answered. And so put my faith on the back burner. By the time I was a junior, I was basically an atheist. So I kind of realized I was doing everything the same every weekend, expecting different results, which that equals insanity. And so I decided that I needed to make a change. And so I was going to be an atheist. That was where I was at. I knew I wanted to kind of change out of the LSU party lifestyle, but I didn't really believe in Jesus anymore. And so I bought a book about atheism called The God Delusion. And I read it straight through and it actually brought me back to faith in God. I just didn't think it really made sense. So I always say I need to thank Richard Dawkins for keeping me Catholic.
Wow.
And I closed that book and I was sitting on this bed at summer school and I just prayed. I just said, God, I don't know if you're real, but I'm going to jump on your team and you better prove yourself to me, which is a super dangerous prayer. And so within a couple months, I met a young Baptist woman who loved Jesus so much and her lifestyle just looks so different from mine. And it was very attractive because really the first time I met her, she annoyed me so much. And I realized when I walked away, I was like, the only reason she annoyed you is because she has joy that you don't have. And so we became really close friends and she taught me how to pray. She kind of reintroduced me into the Christian life. She taught me who Jesus was. And I learned in those couple of years, my last couple of years at LSU, that Jesus wanted me, not the good version of me. He just wanted me. And then he would do the rest. And that just completely transformed my life. I left LSU. I went into accounting for a year, but I was so on fire. It was unbelievable. All I talked about at work was really Jesus. Thank God. My coworkers really liked me. They didn't mind it so much. And I would just listen to these priests and these pastors. And I was, all I could think about was I had grown up around Jesus. I was receiving him in the Eucharist. All of my friends had as well, and they did not know him. I was the only person besides one other friend of mine who were still practicing our faith. And that just set me on fire to try to get the word out that Jesus is amazing, basically. And so I left accounting after a year, and I became a youth minister. And then during that year as a youth minister, I learned about the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. I did everything in my power not to become a missionary. And then the Lord has his way, and here I am. I was a missionary for 5 years with Focus. First at Tennessee, then in Texas State, and then various roles at the office. And I met my husband there, and we had our two children. And during the time that my first child was born, it just became very apparent that I needed to let Jared kind of run with Focus and really support him in that ministry. And I still wanted to work, and so I was looking for something else. And Endow came on the radar. And I wasn't super interested at the time. I pray with scripture, like that's where I'm at. And Endow does studies on the magisterium of the church. But through talking to the president of Endow and just through meeting the people that work there, I became so convinced that we need to know our scripture. As Catholics, we don't know it. We need to know it. But we need to know our tradition as well. It's really what makes us Catholic, that the beauty of the authority that's been handed down that nobody knows. It's so I always call it a treasure that nobody knows about. It's the devil's greatest trick, I say. It's his greatest trick to take the most amazing thing we've been handed and make sure that nobody knows about it. And so I've been working with Endow for a little over a year now, and I've been loving it. So just wanting to bring to light the treasures of our faith that we have lost for so many years.
I love that. I feel like we could listen to your whole journey for an entire podcast, and then we could talk about the real reason we had you on. But, you know, you bring up a great point about kind of uncovering these treasures, which has really been on the radar of Becky and I, and also another project that we work on with Helena Daly, which is unearthing those treasures of the church. And the one particular treasure we want to talk to you about today is Humana Vitae. We sit in the 50th year since this encyclical, and I know that you, as at Endow, are doing like a book study. So I'm wondering if you could speak into that a little bit.
Absolutely. Yep. So that's mainly what we do. We provide small group studies for women to come together to learn the tradition of the church. Mainly it comes from the message of John Paul II and the feminine genius. And so if we as women know our dignity, we can truly rebuild culture. And going along with that message is this beautiful document, Humana Vitae. And so we've had a study on Pope Paul VI's Humana Vitae, which if for people who are listening, if they don't know, it's the document that was released in 1968 by Pope Paul VI, reaffirming the Catholic Church teaching on contraception, that it's immoral. And so it's quite a bombshell, really. And so what we wanted for this 50th year is to revisit the document. And so we had Emily Stimson Chapman rewrite the study for us, just give it a little bit of a breath of fresh air to get this into the hands of women, to revisit the words of Pope Paul VI and to understand it from a couple of different perspectives. And so the study really lays out like what was going on at the time. And so like culturally with the sexual revolution, with just where the culture was, the history of contraception. And so it was seen as immoral until the 30s, and whenever the Anglican Church changed its teaching. And then all the other Christian denominations followed suit. It talks about the different options for Catholic couples. So contraception versus natural family planning, and goes into that, and then also how to live it out practically. And so it's really just meant to revisit his words and bring it in to 2018 for this generation to understand our parents' generation. But then what do we do with it now? And so that's mainly what our study is meant to do. And so I actually encourage, just a quick plug, for anybody to start a group. It's such an important document, and I think it brings so much light to where we are as a culture today.
without a doubt. You know, just thinking about the Catholic Women's Forum that was just held, and we're seeing some great articles online today, kind of circling back to that, of all these predictions that were envisioned would happen as a result of the issue of contraception. You know, we're looking at just kind of hopefully the end of the hashtag Me Too movement, you know, the you know, really where the sexual revolution has taken women, and it's just awful. So this is such a great, important topic. I'm so glad you guys are doing a book study on this. And is this something that this particular, I'm going to call it teaching, you know, did that affect you personally? I know for sure for me, it affected me personally, probably from the other side of making all the mistakes and not really understanding what the church's teaching was on the topic. Or maybe I just decided to just pretend I didn't know what the church's teaching was on that, mm-hmm. but had my own personal fallout as a result and realizing like, oh my gosh, Mother Church was so right. So, you know, is that something that had affected you at all? Or was this as, you know, you went through your conversion of coming from an atheist to knowing Jesus Christ radically, is that when you really began to understand Humanae Vitae's truth? And were you able to connect that to anything that you lived through and how there was kind of like the before and after, like the right and wrong?
Absolutely. I'm just laughing because when I came to know Jesus, contraception, like, who doesn't use contraception? that was my thought. Like, I also went through, like, I wanted to leave the church for a while. That's another whole story. Ended up staying Catholic, but I completely was like, oh yeah, I'm going to be Catholic. Eucharist is real. Confession's real. But of course I'm going to contraception. Are you kidding me? And I've always been pretty ambitious career-wise. And so it wasn't even a question in my mind. I honestly didn't really know Catholic women who didn't use it. Mm-hmm. And so when I was living in Florida, I went to a Janet Smith talk for the youth group I was working with, and she was speaking on chastity. And she touched on contraception at the end of it. I had never heard of her, but everything she said just made my ears perk. And I went home, I Googled everything she said to make sure she wasn't lying and like making things up. And that's really, you know what Humanae Vitae really did for me? So after I Googled that and I started looking into contraception and realized, okay, like, I can't use this, not just because it's a rule, but because there's a beauty. Like, there's a beauty that we're missing out on because we've accepted this for our own convenience. But what Humanae Vitae really did for me was it actually made me trust the church again. Hmm. Because I had grown up in this church and I never fully embraced the gospel, whether that was my fault or the church's fault. I'm sure there's a mix there. And so whenever I became friends with this Baptist girl and met all these wonderful Protestants, my trust for the church went so far down. And honestly, reading Humanae Vitae, learning about it through Janet Smith and doing my own Googling, I was like, oh my gosh, like the church has wisdom. And so I never used it in marriage, but I did before I was planning on it. And I guess I'll add one other thing was when I was in college, I was working at a lawyer's office and I was doing a class action lawsuit for birth control. Mm. And so I'm calling all of these women, I'm learning about their strokes and their pulmonary embolisms and all the complications that they had with birth control. I was using the exact same one at the time.
Wow.
Even though I was in college and I really didn't need it. And so I got off of it. And then I went to my doctor and he put me back on. Wow. And I took it for a month. I was like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, these women are suffering. Why would I do this to my own body? And why are we not paying attention to this, saying that maybe there's a problem here and there's a better answer? So I also had that in my background. So on hearing Janet Smith, it probably wasn't a super far jump. But I will say it definitely made me trust the church again. That was a big thing because the Catholic Church, like loud and proud, we stood whenever everybody else didn't. And I think that's just huge.
Mm-hmm. You know, you said something earlier about to understand our parents' generation. Mm-hmm. And I can actually remember my parents had a conversion when I was in high school. And this is when, I mean, our church just went through such a tough time in the 60s and the sexual revolution and all those things, and the teachings were confusing, and we were all of a sudden looking a little more Protestant than we were before. Or not, I don't want to make sweeping statements, but we've all heard this story a million times. If you were raised as a Catholic in the 80s and the 90s, 70s, 80s, 90s, then you didn't really know your faith, you know? And I mean, I was definitely that person. But I remember my parents all of a sudden not being on the pill anymore, which they probably would die if they knew I just said that on podcast. But I mean, it's just part of their story. They have a beautiful story and how the Lord has really worked in their lives. And they are two of the most holy people that I know. And they are seeking Jesus with everything that they have. But they just didn't know. Mm-hmm. Therefore, they couldn't teach me. And so it's this perpetual, the not knowing just perpetuates through the generations. But understanding that our parents weren't rebelling. Mm-hmm. And because I could get upset that my parents didn't teach me my faith and therefore I fell away for so many years. I didn't know, you know, why we did what we did. But I can't, well, like, how can I blame them for something that they didn't have the capacity to do, you know? So I think that that's actually a really important point, and I'm glad you brought it up. And this conversation about contraception, we are going to have another episode on this. So I was actually somewhere yesterday and someone said, hey, I'm so ready to hear y'all do an episode on contraception. So I know it's going to be good for our listeners. But when you say Humana Vitae made me embrace the church again, like, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. That's a very strong statement.
Yeah, it was the first time that I just realized that, A, the church has wisdom. And I think a lot of times we think it doesn't. I kind of joke with my friends that the church just doesn't want to be the unpopular girl on the block, you know, like, mm-hmm. Oh, they're against this and they're against this. It's that there's wisdom there. And if we give the church time to speak, we'll see the wisdom. And you don't have to agree with it. Just give it a shot. And maybe you will, you know, maybe we will. And so, yeah, it really did. It was the first time that I was like, they were right.
Well, what I find fascinating too, Mallory, is just, you know, your journey of, you know, obviously hearing Janet Smith, who is so brilliant on that. And I know Vicki mm-hmm. Thorne goes even a little bit more elaborate mm-hmm. on the biology of it. And it's so fascinating. I have shared that with my college age girls and my high school age girls, much to the chagrin of some people who say that I share too much with my kids. So I'm like, no, they're hearing it from other sources. Like you either have to,
good job,
right? Beat them to the punch, or yep. You know, let them know you don't live in the Stone Ages. So, mm-hmm. And then you know, the really interesting thing, kind of this juxtaposition of you working for a law firm, and you have this case. Right. You know, and this is when I see the fingerprints of God, like he's in everything. He's in everything. You know, so often we can partition our faith life, like this is my prayer life and this is my Sunday life and this is my adoration life. And then, but this is my work life. It's like, you know, the kingdom values need to be in everything. And even mm-hmm. in that job, as you know, going through that, you're calling these girls for this, legal briefing or whatever you had to do. You know, you're really seeing that, like, God was communicating even through that. And so, you know, it was probably just what your mind needed to hear, right? You needed to hear a bit of, you know, the church component, but you also really needed to see maybe the science component of it. I know when my oldest daughter went off to college, I mean, she was like, yeah, Mom, everybody takes contraception. I mean, she's at a Catholic mm-hmm. university. Everybody takes contraception. And I'm like, really? She's like, yeah, like, everybody. So, you know, she travels with her sports team. And so she knows all these girls pretty, pretty closely. And, you know, I found it really interesting. My daughter was injured and she had to have surgery. And the doctor's like, are you on birth control? And she's like, no. And he's like, are you on birth control? Yeah, like, are you hearing me? And she's like, no, I'm not. But I mean, the risk for this surgery, I mean, you know, the doctors and the surgeons know the risks when you're going to be mm-hmm. compromised in a situation like that. Was she going to mm-hmm. be flying? Was she undergoing surgery? And, you know, it makes me sad and mad at the same time when you went back to the doctor and you're saying, here's what this, and then, you know, you're kind of being re-prescribed it again. And that's frustrating because, you know, the source of that, I'm sure, is just the money component. But, you know, I think it's we really have to educate the girls, you know, starting out really young. I mean, I know it's at the high school level. You know, our girls go to a Catholic high school. I know many, many girls who are on that. They can walk into a Planned Parenthood and get it for $5 or whatever it is. And is it because they're terribly misguided young women? No. They're incredibly miseducated young women. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really the big difference is we need to be able to educate without this veil of shame because they just don't know. They really and truly don't know. And this is why I really want to embrace what you guys are doing with Endow and this study. You know, is this study that you're proposing, and I know Emily's got such a great ability to write. So my question is there an age group that it's most appropriate for?
So it's really for all women. It was written towards the adult woman, but I read it in about a week, and I would say, I mean, it's pretty academic, but it's also, I think it gives a lot of context for developing a broader worldview. So one of the things that actually I thought was incredibly interesting was, she goes through the way that, so there was the minority report and the majority report. And so if you don't mind, I'm just going to give a little history on what was going on for your listeners. So in 1968, the church was looking into changing the teaching on Humana Vitae, and Pope Paul VI put together a task force to look into the what birth control does and whether it could be compatible with church teaching. And so they looked into it, and this majority report came out saying, yes, we should change the teaching and we should allow contraception. We should not say it's immoral. And then a minority report came out saying that, no, we shouldn't. And just a caveat, Pope John Paul II was on that minority report. And what Emily says in the writings of the study is that the way the majority report made their decision was to say, okay, marriages have to be open to life, but let's look at that entire morality of that. And so if a couple gets married and they have a couple kids, right, but they use contraception, but then they still have children, that the overall life of their marriage was open to life. And then the minority report said, no, every single sexual act has to be open to life in order for it to be moral. And so it ended up being like, what's your end game and how do you want to get there? And so she just, when she goes into that in the study, she really helps develop what I think is an overall Catholic worldview of, okay, what does morality actually mean? And the reason the minority report works is because it does have to be in every single circumstance, because every single circumstance is a yes or a no. Right. And so mm-hmm. it's not saying that the church, which is something I think is really beautiful, the church trusts couples with their families. And I think that's really important to iterate. So the church is not demanding that every family be gigantic. Like, we're not trying. This is not like a take over the world by human army type scenario. The church trusts married couples to know their situations and to make discerning choices on their family size. But they just want them to do it in a moral way that is open to the possibility of life and generosity. Mm-hmm. And so the study covers all of that. And I think a way that is very easy for a high school girl to understand, a young adult to understand. And so I would say it really is for all ages. I would probably suggest if it's a younger, I wouldn't say middle school. I'd probably suggest for high school, you'd have somebody older that can mentor those women, which you right. would anyway. But yeah, I really, my favorite thing about the study was honestly the context and the fact that it does actually give you an overall worldview, because I think that's what we've been cheated on. Mm-hmm. And Becky, I know you were talking about our parents' generation and how it's really, they couldn't give what they didn't have. And I think about that all the time, because there's this like younger John Paul II generation coming in sometimes with like, you know, we're so excited about these teachings that we can almost alienate them or make them or just put some blame there, whenever really what's been missing is a worldview, a cohesive worldview that we can actually see the world through the eyes of God and make choices through the eyes of God. And that's what I think the study does really well. And I think it's really important for young women to grasp that as soon as possible.
Well, it makes me want to go and buy it right now. I mean, growing up and not having that teaching, and then all the years that I was away from the church and going through marriage, the first 15 years of marriage without the teaching of Humana Vitae to undergird our decision regarding contraception, family size, all of that, there was a lot of pain. There was a lot of confusion and a lot of chaos when it came to trying to figure out what this is all about. And then, of course, like you said, you have the world speaking in and feeding you with all these ideas of what sex is, what marriage is, what is the point. And to understand that love is an action is not something that I really was formed in my non-Catholic traditions. And so this life-giving love, you know, all these ideas that come from the Catholic teachings on marriage and intimacy and Humana Vitae, when I finally read that, I was like, oh, this is so healing. This is so beautiful. All those years that I begged the Lord, what is your will on this? What do we do? I know, and it's kind of ironic, it was a Southern Baptist Sunday school class where my husband and I were challenged regarding contraception because they were abortifacient. And interesting enough, that's where we stopped using contraception. I mean, it was years before we became, that was actually before we even had children. So it was years and years before we came to the church and learned the truth and all that. But it is truly a beautiful writing. It's a beautiful teaching, and it's not about the rules. Mm-hmm. It's really more of a love story of how God created us and what he created us for. And it's not about, you know, trying to enforce all these bad rules on you and take away your freedoms. It's just not that at all.
I think that's so true. I think it shows the beauty of what marriage is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think when I look back and even just thinking about this topic, because it's just kind of been what I've been studying lately, if we as a society had really embraced family life, I think our society would just look a little bit different. I was being interviewed on the Catholic Feminist, and she asked me, well, what do you think it looks like for society to be friendly to marriage and family? And I think that if we had embraced that as a society, then in our workplaces, we wouldn't be trying to like forego children for career. But as a society, we would have embraced that the woman is clearly not only her facility. She has so much to offer, and workplaces would actually be making it possible for women to contribute to the workforce and to also raise a family. Like, it would just be a lot more friendly towards families, instead of where we're starting to see, at least I know like my generation, the millennial generation, they don't want children. We're not having very many at all because it's just seen as such an impediment to the life I could have. Versus if we could go back, which I know we can't, but if we could, and say, no, marriage and family is a good, and it's not easy, but it is a great good. And so we want to make society friendly to that. I think it would just have been a game changer.
Oh, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And true point, we can't go back, but we can go forward. Mm-hmm. And so I am thinking about an email that we got, I guess, Becky, it was over the weekend, that left me a bit stunned, really. It came from a woman in China. and a listener to the podcast, which that was the first thing that kind of stuns me sometimes. You know, you realize how far the reach is. And her story was really beautiful, but grew up in Mexico. She is a she works at a boarding school in China. And just hearing her talk about the love she has for these students of hers, and really that they're like her own children. And she really doesn't have, obviously in China, a lot of support in her faith and an outlet for her faith. So she was just thanking us for the podcast, which was, like I said, it was just very stunning to get this. But I'm thinking of this woman, and I'm thinking about, you know, even the messages that when you have one person who can really speak into the truth of a topic like this, you know, if she's affecting one other person or two other people, mm-hmm. that is huge. And so much of where our focus needs to be is how to move forward. Okay, it is the past, and we see the fallout in everything. The fallout is everywhere. And you can connect the dots into a million things, like the workplace, just like you did. And how do we start reshaping that in a really positive way? And that's what I believe we're called to do once we start to understand the gift of what Humanae Vitae is. It's one thing to just take in this study and think, wow, this has really changed my marriage and personal life. And it's beautiful. And that is great. Then it's how we go out and share that good news with one other person that maybe might share it with one other person. It becomes that ripple effect, how the church was grown initially. We have to think in that mindset, even on the topics today. And that's why I'm very, very excited about this study. I mean, I would encourage people who are listening who are in youth ministry to let this be a small group study for you. If you're a youth minister in a high school, if there is a way you can get something like this in a Catholic high school, I mean, everything is a fight right now. Everything is a fight, you know. But to go out there and fight the good fight and speak to it in the way Mallory is, in truth and in beauty and in tenderness, but there is strength, because the strength comes from the truth. What is, who said it? C.S. Lewis or Tolkien about the truth is like a lion, just set it free and it will defend itself. Do you guys, we'll pull that up. But that is, you know, we don't always have to be this crazy woman warrior saying, oh, you know, getting on this bandwagon. Just speak the truth. Mm-hmm. And it defends itself. So, but in order to speak the truth, we have to really understand it in our heart and in our mind. It's that renewal that we're talking about. So I want to just encourage people to really look into this, especially if they don't know much about it. So where can our listeners go to learn a little bit more about the study and maybe even start one or just enter in one locally?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can just go to www.endowgroups.org. And we actually just launched a brand new website. So you can go there. If you go to the store, you can just scroll down. You can see all of our studies, but you'll see the new Humanae Vitae. And then if you want to host a group, it's right there on the front page. You can just click host a group, set it up, invite women, or you can try to find a group. And both buttons are right on the front page. And so just visit us there. You can also connect with Endow on Instagram and Facebook at Endow Groups. So if you have more questions and you're an Instagram person, you can direct message us and we'll get back to you. Or you can email me at mallory.smythe@endowgroups.org.
I did get on the website last night and just trying to absorb more what Endow Groups is doing and more, but, you know, just really preparing for our conversation today. And I was struck by the beauty of the website. And it's full of information, yet it is very easy to access that information. And I was also struck by there are girls' studies. So you guys have written some studies that are specifically for that middle school, early high school years. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about that? I know we're talking about Humanae Vitae, but this, I was really excited to see this.
Absolutely. So we have a three-part series for middle school. So it's defining dignity, forming friendships, and loving leadership. And then we have the first part of our high school study, which will eventually also be a three-part study, created for love. And the purpose really is just to meet those women where they are, so middle school and high school, and to bring them into the conversation of what it actually means to be a woman. As I mentioned earlier, this was all started out of John Paul II's message on the feminine genius. And so I know, Becky and Megan, I know we could probably all talk about how we wish we had known so much of what we know now earlier. And I know that I was on the phone with a woman in her 70s once, and she had just finished the Denver Biblical School, and she was so on fire. And she's just like, I wish I knew when I was younger. And so we just want to get this message to young girls in middle school and high school, whenever they are being bombarded with so much information about who they are, about what it means to be feminine, about how they should interact with men, about what religion really is. Mm-hmm. And most of it's bad news. Most of it's not true, especially with the iPhone. You know, since I am a mom, I get the scary mommy blogs on screens all day long. And so this is really just these are smaller studies based on the teachings of the feminine genius, and teaching them how to live that as a middle schooler and a high schooler.
Well, it's wonderful. And I think you guys are doing something very beautiful, very rich. You are an apostolate, right?
Yes.
Okay. So, I mean, that's big. You have that backing from the church, Mother Church, and in her wisdom, knowing that you guys are holding fastly and with such dignity and grace, and you're sharing a beautiful message with the women, and I'm sure some men too, in through your ministry. So we thank you so much. We thank you for your time, and you were just delightful, and we'll have to have you back, and we can talk about all these other subjects, but I'm sure that we could hammer out.
I would love to come back. I can talk about anything, and I can make it a 3-part Lord of the Rings series. So.
That sounds great.
And Becky and Megan, thank you so much for your podcast and for what you guys are doing, because I was super excited when I found it. I just think some of the topics that you're covering aren't being covered. I'm a big podcaster, so awesome. I was really encouraged by a lot of the topics that you guys have already covered.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. That is very, very encouraging. So we thank you for coming, and we look forward to sharing this with our listeners. Megan, Mallory was just, like I said in the wrap up, she's delightful, mm-hmm. and so much energy and so much love for Jesus and the church, and focusing on the treasures of the church just really encouraged me so much.
Oh, I know. I love that. And you know, something that she brought up that we didn't really unpack because we wanted to get right to the topic of Humana Vitae. But when she was talking about her journey, and she was talking about, you know, she was a self-proclaimed atheist and said, you know, this God thing, whatever, and goes and picks up a book called The God Delusion. And it's in that she said, none of that made sense. And she turned her heart to God, and look at where she is. And I bring that up because I have friends that have children that are college age, out of college, and are claiming the same thing. I no longer believe in God. I'm a self-proclaimed atheist. And these parents are just distraught. And I would be too, right? And so, you know, you hear that and you say, just keep praying. And, you know, I would, you know, even to be so bold as to encourage them to then go deeper in what they're trying to say. Maybe even, I mean, she says, she gives Richard Dawkins thanks for making her know God. So, you know, we that was so glossed over, but I just wanted to, you know, kind of use that as a bit of encouragement for parents who might be experiencing that there is always the opportunity to come home, you know, and God has a deep grasp on them. And then not only that, not only does he just call her home, he sets her on fire. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. I love it. I love it. And so, you know, I really, really like what Endow is doing on this particular topic and creating this, this study. And this is important. I love how you had said it, because Mallory had said it, is the, you know, unearthing again and talking about the treasures of the church. And Humanae Vitae is a treasure of the church. And so I highly encourage our listeners to know more, learn more, and share more.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she even said it, that it's the traditions, these treasures of the church, it's really what makes us Catholic. Because the Bible, the Word of God, the inspired word of God is, it promises to not return void. And that gift has been put in the hands of many people. But without the voice, the wisdom of Mother Church guiding us in how to interpret that word, well, we can get a little lost in that. Well, we do get lost in that because, I don't know, look at the 50,000 different denominations out there. And so I really loved that statement that our traditions are what makes us Catholic. And this is really an important piece. The other important piece that when I'm listening to her story and you bring it back up about, well, I'm an atheist now, she says. Well, no, you have an unchanging mark on your soul because you have received the gift of grace through your baptism. You have become a child of God. That never changes. She was infused with grace through the sacraments. Whether she knew her faith or not, that doesn't change the efficacy of those sacraments. And so I will second that encouragement to any parents that have children who may have fallen away, because the power of God's grace is beyond our imagination. We just cannot even comprehend what he can do.
That's right. And you know, hearing that, it's like, it's always going on in my heart all the time. Whatever stumbling block I come upon, his grace just seems to always be able to break through. Oh,
mm-hmm. So, yeah. We just can't walk through this life without that knowledge.
Right.
I mean, I guess we can. It just...
Be miserable.
Be a little, yeah.
Miserable. And, you know, also, we'll put this in the show notes, but Mallory brought up Janet Smith, who does tremendous work, and we'll put some of her information in there. I had mentioned Vicki Thorne, and there's some great YouTube videos on the biology of sex by Vicki Thorne. There's about a three-part series, and they're so fascinating. I mean, even going back to the first, you know, mitochondrion Eve, if you're interested in science and understanding all of our ancestral history in that sense, I recommend watching these too. So Becky will be sure to put them up on the show notes for our listeners to dive into this topic even more.
Yeah, absolutely. I listened to those, or kind of watched those videos too. And it's fascinating. Yeah, absolutely fascinating. You know, I didn't tell this story while we were listening to our interview or doing the interview. And that is when I was in nursing school, back when I was, you know, not even 20, I remember a gal had a stroke in our nursing school class because of the pill. I do remember that. She was a smoker, and that was kind of the thing is, oh, well, she only had the stroke because she was on the pill and smoking. But that still is even a... not fullness of the truth of what the pill does. And so anyway, it reminded me of that story. I'd forgotten about it.
Yeah. Sadly, those stories are much more common than we realize.
Well, and I remember thinking, oh, well, the statistics are, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. So she's the one in, I don't know, 10 or 15 that will have a stroke because of contraception. So I should be fine. Like, how idiotic.
Well, you know, isn't it interesting how much we can rationalize and make certain things seem reasonable?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I'm queen of rationalization. Good gravy. All right, guys, we thank you so much for joining us this week. We're so grateful for all of you with us in the trenches. Remember, you can give us some financial support on our support us page. Find show notes at thrivinginthetrenches.com. Please subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where you can join the conversation. Thanks for coming.